This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. The National Security Council's Ukraine expert has been telling impeachment investigators he raised concerns about President Trump's push to have Ukraine investigate Democrats and Joe Biden. AP correspondent Targum Mogadi reports from the White House.
Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman was in full uniform with decorations including a combat infantry badge and a Purple Heart after being wounded in Iraq. He came to the U.S. as a toddler from the former Soviet Union, and some Trump allies are trying to discredit him. Former GOP Congressman Sean Duffy appeared to question Vindman's loyalty on CNN by saying he has an affinity for Ukraine. Number three House Republican Liz Cheney says enough.
We need to show that we are better than that as a nation.
And while the GOP may not agree with Vindman, criticizing his patriotism is shameful.
We're talking about decorated veterans who have served this nation, who have put their lives on the line.
Sagar Meghani at the White House.
The U.S. House of Representatives voted overwhelmingly Tuesday to officially recognize the mass killings of Armenians by the Ottoman Empire as genocide. The historic vote is seen as a rebuke to Turkey, which has spent nearly a century denying there was a genocide. The Turkish foreign minister said the resolution was Congress' revenge for Turkey's incursion into northern Syria. There has been no reaction so far from the Trump administration. And a U.S. federal judge blocked the state of Alabama's abortion ban that would have made the procedure a felony at any stage of pregnancy in almost all cases. The Alabama law calls for a sentence of 10 years to life in prison for the abortion provider, with no exceptions for rape or incest. For details on much more news, as always, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com or on the VOA mobile app. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson won Parliament's approval on the Britain's first December election in almost a century. A bid to break the Brexit deadlock. Reuters' Gavino Gary reports.
So the eyes have it.
Christmas came early for UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson Tuesday, who won Parliament's approval 238-20 for a December early general election. This after a string of stinging defeats, Johnson finally received the necessary backing from opposition parties. Labour's Jeremy Corbyn had opposed an election while a no-deal Brexit was still on the table. But now that the EU has finalized the UK's third Brexit extension until the end of January, he said that condition was now met. The early election will be held on December 12th.
That was Garvino Gare reporting. The association, the National Collegiate Athletic Association, the NCAA, appears to be moving toward allowing U.S. college athletes to cash in on their fame. AP correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
The NCAA Board of Governors voted unanimously to clear the way for the amateur athletes to benefit from the use of their name, image, and likeness. The NCAA has long barred players from hiring agents and has steadfastly refused to allow players to be paid by their schools. But that's being challenged by states. A California law set to take effect in 2023 would prevent athletes from losing their scholarships or being kicked off their teams for signing endorsement deals. Now, board chair Michael Drake says the NCAA realizes it must embrace change to provide the best possible experience for college athletes. I'm Ben Thomas.
A former Trump administration insider who played a role in the Russia probe is ready to run for the House seat, just vacated by California's Katie Hill. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
The potential candidate is George Papadopoulos, who made headlines for trying to set up a meeting between candidate Donald Trump and Russia's Vladimir Putin to get dirt on Hillary Clinton during the 2016 campaign. Papadopoulos eventually pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI and cooperated with special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation. He spent 2 weeks in prison and emerged a critic of President Trump. This weekend, Papadopoulos tweeted about the Katie Hill scandal, saying that he loves the state too much to see it run down by candidates like Hill, who says that she's the victim of a revenge porn campaign while under investigation for an inappropriate relationship with a congressional staff member. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
And baseball's World Series championship will be decided Wednesday night in Houston after the Washington Nationals defeated the Houston Astros 7-2 Tuesday night, evening the series at 3 games each. From here in Washington, I'm Michael Brown, VOA News. We'll be right back.
Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Wednesday, October 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Mozambique's opposition will challenge the October 15 election results.
Clearly, there was ballot box stuffing in favor of the incumbent. The tally sheets were changed. All these contributed to the size of the victory of Frelimo.
That's Adriana Nuvunga of the Maputo-based Center for Democracy and Development. Rwanda's opposition leader hopes to run again for president in 2024, while the Guinea-Bissau's president dismissed his entire cabinet weeks before next month's election. And the funerals of those killed during the October 14 protests in Guinea-Conakry will not take place today, Wednesday.
We want to have a mass funeral, but yesterday night we have a communique from the government saying that bodies are not ready. So I think we cannot bury bodies today.
Sidi Ature is the leader of the opposition union of Republican Forces Party. Uganda hosts the 4th African Union Judicial Dialogue in Kampala today, Wednesday. And there is a fear in Uganda's gay community after death penalty threats. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Mozambican President Filipe Nyusi and his Frelimo party won a resounding victory in the October 15 elections. Official results show Nyusi winning 73% of the presidential vote. Frelimo will hold more than two-thirds of the seats in the national parliament. It also has a majority and the right to nominate governors in all provinces. Opposition parties say they plan to contest the results, but commentators see little chance of overturning the results. Tom Balco reports from Maputo.
The U.S. Embassy said that some election results strained credibility, and the EU observer mission said the vote was conducted in a climate of fear and intimidation on an unlevel playing field. Adriana Nvunga of the Maputo-based Center for Democracy and Development says the elections were rigged from the outset, but that he was still surprised the opposition was left completely empty-handed.
Everyone believed that in a free and fair election, there would have been power sharing at the provincial level. Clearly, there was ballot box stuffing in favor of the incumbent, and the tabulation part at the polling stations, that was not transparent in several parts. The tally sheets were changed. So clearly, all these contributed to the size of the victory of Frelimo.
The opposition Renamo Party and others said Tuesday they will submit an appeal to the Constitutional Council to have the results overturned and the election rerun. But they are unlikely to get anywhere, Nvunga told VOA.
I don't see the Constitutional Council as it is today to take that forward. They will clearly look at it not on its merit, but more on the formality, etc. And so this is all a part, in my view, of a democratic enclosure in the country.
Antonio Buen, a senior Frelimo official who won a seat in parliament, said the opposition only has itself to blame and that Frelimo's overwhelming victory shouldn't have come as a surprise. The principal mistake of the opposition was to convince itself that the economic, political, social situation that we've been living through in Mozambique, supposedly caused by the so-called hidden debts, would be enough for people to stop voting for Frelimo, Buen says. They didn't do grassroots campaigning or consistent work to transmit a message of what could be an alternative to Frelimo. President Nyusi will be emboldened by the election result to move forward with his political agenda, Buen says. But Nvunga has voiced worry about what Nyusi and Frelimo's domination of the political scene means for Mozambique.
This election not only gave Frelimo victory, but the way that the state power was used, not only against opposition, but particularly against independent observers, you know, that were denied accreditations to our observers. The use of the state power, it tells you that the state is even much more politicized, used by Frelimo to not only to shrink the space for independent thinking, for independent civil society organizations, but overall democratic space.
Pending confirmation of the results by the Constitutional Council, President Nyusi and the new parliament are expected to be sworn into office in January. Tom Bowker for VOA News, Maputo, Mozambique.
Rwanda needs an opposition to ensure that the population, not just the elites, shares in the country's growing economic wealth, says opposition leader Victoire Ingabire. And despite the mysterious deaths of two opposition leaders, Ingabire says she is not giving up on forming an opposition party to run candidates in the 2024 presidential election. Ruud Elmedor reports from Kigali.
Economically speaking, the sky seems to be the limit in Rwanda, which is enjoying 8% annual growth, universal health care, and improved education. But according to de facto opposition leader Victoire Ingabire, only the rich eat the fruits of prosperity. She says anyone who dares to say that in public gets harassed by government officials and, in the worst case, gets killed.
Of course, I am afraid one times, but I don't accept to stay in the fire, to live in the fire, because we need really to struggle for democracy in our country.
Ingabire herself spent 8 years in prison after trying to run against longtime President Paul Kagame in the 2010 election. So far this year, two opposition leaders have been killed in Rwanda. One stabbed to death in September. The other one found dead in a forest in March. Human Rights Watch researcher Audrey Wabwire says an investigation shows the government was likely involved in their deaths.
Sometimes when someone is killed, the evidence suggests that this is something the government is behind. And it would be good to have concrete answers to these things. That's why we push the government to investigate and find out who is involved and why these killings continue.
The Rwandan government has not responded to HRW's claim it likely had a role in the deaths. Ingabire continues her mission, even though the killers haven't been arrested. We drive in a car and she sees a Secret Service official following on a motorbike. She shows us a slum area of Kigali, where people live with hardly any clean water or electricity. There's no asphalt on the road, just red soil. The area is just a kilometer away from the capital's affluent city center.
You can see the growth of economy only in Kigali. But what we need is to divide this with among all Rwandese people.
Ingabire is working to get her FDU in Kinga Party acknowledged. She says it has enough members, but the registration has never come through. 23-year-old Josiane Ingabire is an opposition party member.
Of course, I'm still very young, but the reason why I choose to be in opposition, it's the situation that I see around, that I see on my young age, and I ask how we'll be in my old years.
Ingabire hopes to have her FDU in Kinga registered in time to challenge Kagame again in 2024.
If my political party will be registered, I will participate, but the priority for us is not to participate in the election, it's to get political space is open up in Rwanda.
And if that happens, Ingabire believes prosperity will start to flow to the people of Rwanda in Kigali and beyond. Ruth Elmendorp for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
Today's Wednesday, October 30th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 minutes past the hour. The African, European, and Inter-American Courts of Human Rights have signed a memorandum of understanding in efforts to promote and protect human rights in their respective member states. This comes as Uganda's capital, Kampala, is hosting the 4th African Union Judicial Dialogue today, Wednesday. Moses Havyarimana reports from Kampala.
Three human rights courts of Africa, Europe, and Inter-America signed a memorandum of understanding in efforts to establish a permanent forum for institutional dialogue. Angelica Nussberger is a vice chairman of the European Court.
This memorandum of understanding wants to show that we are not thinking in little boxes like regional boxes, but we all want to construct this whole building of human rights for everybody everywhere. We have identified several areas where we can work together.
In Africa, 30 countries ratified the protocol establishing the court, with only 9 out of the 54 African states to have submitted the declaration to the court. In East Africa, Only Tanzania submitted the declaration while Rwanda withdrew its declaration, hence stopping its citizens and non-government organizations to directly file complaint against it. Sylvain Ore is the president of the African Court.
We know where we can put our path in order to solve so many issues that we are dealing with. For example, issues of implementation of decision, issues of ratification, sensitization, even issues of merit when it comes to deal with the cases, how we deal with cases.
According to the African Court, there is a lack of political will in African Union member states to ratify and make declarations to the African Court. Countries that are yet to submit declarations to the Continental Court, their citizens or non-government organizations cannot be able to access the court. African Court's President Sylvain Ore said that the signed memorandum of understanding between the three continental courts is a move towards harmonization of court policies and decisions.
The fact that we are dealing with human rights, and human rights is the same. You belong to America, you belong to Europe, you belong to Africa. When we take some judgments, some decisions, of course, we should have a certain coherence, harmonization in the judgment. When you have that kind of jurisprudence, you know where you are going.
Human rights in sub-Saharan Africa has deteriorated significantly, with several African governments accused of human rights violations by the United Nations Human Rights Watch, including Burundi and Uganda. With yet majority of the African countries yet to ratify or submit their declarations to the court, many cases of human rights violations go unnoticed, with the victims left with no access to the court. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Kampala.
In Guinea-Conakry, today's mass burials of those killed during the October 14 protest against a suspected third-term bid by President Alpha Condé will not take place as planned. The Ministry of Health and Public Hygiene issued a communique on Wednesday night saying the autopsies it commissioned to determine the actual causes of death have not been completed. The opposition says as many as 9 people were killed, but the government disputes this and wants the detailed autopsies to determine what it calls the real causes of death. And Sidya Touré, the leader of the opposition Union of Republican Forces Party, says the government is trying to provoke the opposition because doctors had assured the opposition that the bodies will be ready for burial today, Wednesday.
It was supposed to take place today. But yesterday night, we have a communique from the government saying that body are not ready. But we know that already. I think it is a kind of provocation, and we don't know what happened exactly. So I think we cannot bury bodies today.
You say you have a communication from the Ministry of Health and Hygiene. The ministry says that it is doing an autopsy on the victims, and because of the complexity of the autopsy, it's not possible to release the bodies.
This is not proof, because we have we work with doctors, and we know that they finish all the autopsy, and body was ready to be buried today. We know that.
So how many people in all do you, the opposition, know were killed during the protest?
From our side, it's 11 people now, because 2 was dead yesterday and today. So that is 11.
Is the government claiming that only 3 people were killed, and that it is not clear if anybody else was killed, and maybe that could be responsible for the delay in releasing the bodies? Because if additional people were brought and the government is claiming that maybe 3 people were killed, don't you think the government's right to delay to know who killed the other people?
No, you know, the number of people who was killed is coming from Human Rights Watch. So people who was killed last week, it was 9 people. And 2 days after, 2 of them was dead because they were was wounded. And we finished all those autopsy with the doctors. We prepare the bodies, and we know that they're really ready to be buried today.
When you say ready to be buried, were you going to have a mass funeral or what?
We want to have a mass funeral. And yesterday night, to have this communique, we don't know why.
When we last talked, you mentioned that perhaps you were planning another mass protest for Thursday. Is that still the case?
No, it's not the opposition. This is the government we want to have mass protests, you know, to receive Alpha Conde coming from Russia, you know. It's something curious. Is the government is protesting against the opposition, you know.
What do you mean the government is protesting against the opposition?
Because they want to put people on the street and have a rally to say that, you know, Alpha will have a third mandate and so. The government have people to come to rally and they ask the army to be here. They have to take T-shirt from the Alpha's party, policemen, you know, government issue. All those people have to take T-shirt from Alpha's party and to have a rally on the street to say that many Guineans was outside to say that they agree to have a new constitution.
So you suspect perhaps the purpose of the government rally would be to encourage the president to announce or to say something about a third term?
Absolutely.
Sidya Touré is the leader of the opposition Union of Republican Forces Party. He was speaking with us from the Guinean capital, Conakry. Guinea-Bissau's President José Mário Vaz dismissed his entire government this week, just weeks before the scheduled presidential elections on November 24. The move throws into question whether polls will take place, despite the fact that Vaz's mandate was officially up in June. Vincent Faucher, a researcher for the French National Center for Scientific Research, talks to Ricky Shryak about what to watch out for next in Guinea-Bissau.
The dismissal of the government is indeed very problematic because the elections are soon and are controversial. We've been through a number of phases with major opposition parties criticizing the way the government was ending the elections. A number of observers, and apparently ECOWAS as well, the regional community, seem to think these objections are very political and are essentially delaying tactics by the opposition, and they have pushed the process forward as much as can be. So it does look like President Vaz, in a way, is trying to find another tool, basically, to delay the elections, which are going to see him probably lose power.
He said that the elections would continue on the date, but is there a concern that will change?
I would be surprised if a new government, the elections could still say the same thing. That would be very surprising.
In the past, ECOWAS has been able to step in and put down sanctions for things and try to eventually get the ball rolling on new government. But the mediator has been Alpha Conde, who has his own issues to deal with in Guinea at the moment. I mean, what's the likelihood that ECOWAS will be able to come in and, quote, fix this?
Well, I would be very surprised if ECOWAS did not do something, because actually Vaz's decision is really a challenge to their last position on this, which was that the government of Gomez, Prime Minister Gomez, would carry on until the election, and that Vaz basically lost his prerogatives as president while he remained president, because, you know, his election should have taken place earlier. So basically he was not an acting president anymore, even though he kept the perks of it. So, and I think that's also why Vaz insisted that the elections would happen on due date, you know, so as to try and explain ECOWAS that things would be good. But to me, it really reads like a challenge to ECOWAS. So I suspect we're going to have a reaction by ECOWAS fairly soon.
Is it legal what Vaz has done?
In a sense, we are past legality. You know, the fact that Vaz is still president is in a way illegal, but then it was agreed with ECOWAS that he should be, but without powers. So the whole legality of all that, you know, which is sort of de facto ad hoc agreements, is very difficult to assess. I think, you know, I think in a way, yes, we're past legality. It's more about power balance and you know, how far ECOWAS wants to push and what forces in Bissau are currently backing Vaz's decision.
Vincent Faucher is a researcher for the French National Center for Scientific Research. He was speaking to Ricky Shryak from Paris. Last week, a Ugandan minister attempted to reintroduce a revoked 2014 law allowing capital punishment for people convicted of gay sex. Meanwhile, police arrested 16 activists on suspicion of homosexuality, which is illegal in Uganda and punishable with up to life in prison. The government's renewed anti-gay focus has led a long-castigated and already fearful gay community to lie low, with some LGBT people forced into hiding. Halima Athumani reports from Kampala.
21-year-old Shamim Priti, not her real name, has taken shelter in a Kampala safe space for the past 3 years. Priti says that when she was 16, her mother kicked her out of the house and called the police because she, Priti, is transgender. When they took me to the police, my mother was there waiting for me. They really mistreated me. There was an officer who was very homophobic. He got a hold of me and beat me up. He called in the media, and in front of the press, they took my clothes off. LGBT support group Icebreakers Uganda set up the safe house in 2012, just 1 year before lawmakers voted to increase the punishment for homosexuality from life in prison to death. Under Western pressure, Uganda in 2014 overturned the Anti-Homosexuality Act. But gay sex remains illegal, and members of the LGBT community are routinely harassed and shunned in a country where many revile homosexuality. Elvis Ayesiga is the program's director at Icebreakers Uganda.
Evicting you, you don't have anywhere to go. You don't have money for rent. You don't have what. So we offer space here, usually for 1 month, so that you go back on your feet as you look for money to go and rent somewhere else.
Earlier this month, Uganda's ethics minister, Simon Lokodo, announced the bill would be reintroduced, raising fears of renewed attacks on the gay community. Pepe Julian Onjima works with Sexual Minorities Uganda.
Already, most people do not have homes. They do not have education. They are not employed. They are homeless. So when something like this comes, it threatens even the little safety that they had.
A Ugandan government spokesman denied any plan to reintroduce what some call the Kill the Gays Bill. Even so, the LGBT community sees an ominous sign in the arrest of 16 gay activists who simply possessed condoms and anti-HIV medicines. Zalen, not the person's real name, is a gay Ugandan.
You're out and then you're thinking, yeah, I'm letting loose. Before you know it, you'll want to dance in a certain kind of way. And then, boom, you're thinking, oh, wait, you have to control yourself. You do not know who's watching or who will get offended by the way you're really having a good time or whatever. So it's, you have to be on the cautious side all the time.
For now, Uganda's LGBT support groups are offering training on what to do in case of arrest and providing a place to hide from persecution. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Months of unrelenting militia attacks in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo are driving people from their homes, adding to the millions already displaced and threatening to spill insecurity elsewhere in Africa's Great Lakes region. Observers warn this week people fleeing the conflict lost small children and possessions as they trekked across the DRC's eastern border into Uganda, Rwanda, and Burundi. They fault the Mai Mai, a general name for the scores of armed fighting groups that have engaged in ethnic clashes for decades. In Guinea-Conakry, today's mass burials of those killed during the October 14 protests against a suspected third-term bid by President Alpha Condé will not take place as planned. The Ministry of Health and Public Hygiene issued a communique Wednesday night saying the autopsies it commissioned to determine the actual causes of death have not been completed. The opposition says as many as 9 people were killed, but the government disputes this and wants detailed autopsy to determine what caused the real death. That's it for this Wednesday, October 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botting, Washington, saying have a good day, Africa.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the first ever Russia-Africa summit in Sochi marks a new era of economic, military, and political engagement between Russia and the continent. We'll take a closer look on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.